Today's daf is Moed Katan Daf Vav. We are holding on the top of Daf Vav Amir Aleph actually already. We got to Daf Vav Amir Aleph. We're about four lines into the page on Daf Vav Amir Aleph. So today we're going to discuss, we're going to continue the discussion of Tziyun Kvarim, of the markings of graves. We already discussed yesterday the source for the concept of why we would have such a halacha to mark off graves, but now we're going to talk about when you find a Tziyun in different spots, where you can assume the Tumah is and where you assume the Tumah isn't. The Gemara is then going to talk about when shluchim go out to find klayim, because the Mishnah had said that they're yotzen ala klayim, the shluchim bezin have to go out to find any klayim that's planted in people's fields, and we're going to talk about how those shluchim get paid, and the three steps of the takana of what shluchim would do when they found klayim, what exactly the punishment was for people who had klayim in their fields, and then the Mishnah on Beis is going to talk about when watering or where watering fields is permitted on Chol HaMoed and where it's not permitted, different types of fields. And then the second mission on the Amud Beis is going to talk about trapping different types of rodents to protect the field, both during Chol HaMoed and during Shemitah, whether that's permissible or whether it's Aser, and different types, it may depend on what type of field it is, may depend on whether it's Chol HaMoed or whether it's Shemitah that we're talking about. So that is going to be the bottom mission on Vav Amud Beis. But let's begin now, the Vav Amud Aleph, four lines from the top of the page, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. So we had mentioned yesterday in the Braisa that Rabbi Yehuda had said that in terms of determining where the Tumah is in a given field, based on a Tziyun, based on a marking of the field, it's important to have someone there who knows what he's talking about. It's important to have a Talmud Chacham, a Zakein, someone that you could consult that actually knows some of the halachos of Tumah. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ad Sheyesham Zakein O Talmud, Lefi Sheina Kol Bekiin Bedavar. That you need to rely on someone who knows what he's talking about, because not everybody knows what they're talking about, not everybody is an expert when it comes to the laws of Tumah. Amar Abaye, Shema Minot, Subra Me'arabon and Dika B'masa, Kol Mili D'masa Alei Ramya. We see from this comment of Rabbi Yehuda that when there is a Tzurba Me'arabon, when there's a young Talmud Chacham in the town, then all of the issues of the town really need to go through him. It's his responsibility to make sure that he's familiar with all of the issues of the town. He could say, you know, I'm not learning Taurus now. What do I have to be? What do I have to know about the Taurus in this field? But no, he's not allowed to say such a thing. It's all on him. All the inyanim of the city are on his shoulders, and included in that is the tziyun of the kvaros, because he's the baki in the halachos, so he has to carry it through lemaisa to be on top of these things. If there's no one that's gadol mena b'chachma, even I think the chiddush over here is that even though he's only a tzur b'mirabanan, even though he's only a tzur b'mirabanan means a young talmud chacham, someone under the age of 40. So normally you would say that such a person is not ready to be an authority. But if there's no one that's gadol mena b'chachma in the city, so he's the one that has to take charge. B'makom sheinish, he's the one that has to be there to determine the halachos in all the different difficult circumstances. I'm Rav Yehuda. Next halacha. Rav Yehuda says, Matza Evin Mitzuyanis. If you come across a stone that has a tziyun on it, that has a marking on it, which clearly is meant to mark off Tumah. So where do you assume the Tumah is? Tachteha Tameh. You assume the area right underneath the stone is Tameh. Matza Evin Tachteha Tameh. Shtayim, if you find two Avanim Mitzuyanos, if you find two stones that are marked off, Im yesh sid beinehen, beinehen tameh. If there's some cement in between the stones, then you assume the area in between the stones are tameh, and that the two stones are there is to mark off where the beginning and the end of the tumah are, but the area of tumah is in between them as well. The sid is how they would be mitzayin. They would take sid, they would take cement or plaster, and that's how they would mark off the grave. So if there's sid in between them, you assume the tumah is in between them as well. Vim ein sid beinehen, beinehen tar. But if there's no sid in between them, you just have the two stones that are marked, and the area in between them is empty, then you assume the Tumah is only where the stones are, but in between the stones is perfectly Tahar. So, frankly, Gemara, but wait a second, is this true even if the area in between them is not plowed? Vatanya, we have another Braisa that seems to assume that it makes a difference whether the area between the stones is plowed or not, because the Braisa says, Matza Evanachas Mitzuyanes, when you find one stone that's marked off, Tachtel Tameh, the area underneath it is Tameh. Shtayim, if you find two stones in the Yishchorish Beinehen, only if the area plowed is the area in between them is plowed, then beinehen tar. Then you assume there's no tumah in between them, that it's perfectly tar in between them. That's why they were plowing up the area. But v'im lav beinehen tame. But if the area in between them is unplowed, it's untouched ground, then you assume that that's tame. It sounds like even if there's no sid beinehen, if there's no sid, if it's an unplowed area, then it's going to be tame. If it's plowed area, it doesn't make a difference if there's sid or not. It's going to be tar. Sounds from this brisa. Sounds like Gemara Amar Rav Papa Hacha Kshasid Shafuch Al Rashayen Umruda Lekan Lekan. Over here, we're talking about where there was clearly sid on the top of the stones, but it seems to be cracked and it seems to be falling off on the sides of the stones, off to the sides. Yika Chorish Beinein Beinein Tar. So then, if the area in between them is plowed, you could assume that that area is going to be tahar. De'emor Machmas Chorish Hudeikbal, because you could assume that whatever fell off of whatever sid is cracked off and you find in between, it was just from the koach of the plowing. When you were plowing it, it just got chipped off. And if it's not a plowed area, then the sid that you find in between those stones must have been put there on purpose, and therefore the area in between them is tame. It's not just something that got chipped off of the stones and therefore landed in the middle, but it actually was placed in the middle on purpose as a marker of tumah, and therefore the area in between them is in fact tame. Now, on that first halacha that we said, that you find one stone, the halacha that there was no discussion in the Gemara, just took it as a davar pashut. You find one stone. What do we say? Tachteh tameh. The area underneath it is tameh. So Rashi is bothered. We already had a Gemara yesterday. The Gemara said that you're not supposed to mark tumah directly on top of the tumah, because if you mark tumah directly on top of the tumah, it's too late. By the time the person finds it, he's standing on it and he's already tameh, or his taras that he's holding is already tameh. So you have to be marchik a little bit. You can't be marchik too much, because you can't be mafsid Eretz Yisrael. You don't want to block off too much of an area in Eretz Yisrael to make it unusable, but you can't mark directly on top of the tumah. So Rashi is already bothered. How can you say tachteh tameh, that only underneath the stone is tameh? That would mean you're marking it was marked incorrectly. So Rashi points out, b'sid tachteh tameh umipimori hazakein even achas mitzuyena sheish sir al gaba de'enu tzarech laharchik atziyun mina even lefisha even gavoa al gabe karka. In yesterday's daf, we were talking about where you find a marking. You find a marking for a grave, and that's it. Today's daf, we're talking about you find an Even mitsuyenes. You find a stone that happens to be marked with sid as well. When it's a stone, it protrudes above ground. When it's just a marking, so it's some cement poured on the ground. So that, you need to have it at some distance from the tumah in order that people should realize. But when you're talking about an even mitsuyenes, so you'll be able to see it from a distance because it protrudes above ground. And therefore, since you're going to see it from a distance, you can mark the tumah directly above the area of the tumah itself. That's how Rashi quotes from Moriah Zaken to Bimiyashiv, how this Gemara fits with the Gemara that we learned yesterday. If one border of a field is marked off, you have the right to assume that that border is tameh, but the whole rest of the field is tahar. It's not marking off to say that this entire field is tameh. It's only on one border, so it's there to tell you just on the border is tameh, the rest of the field is tahar. Shnayim, if you find two borders marked off, heim tamein, again, only they are tameh, but the whole rest of the field is considered to be tahar. Shlosha, if you find three borders of the field marked off, again, heim tamei in v'kolasod kula tahara. Only those borders are tamei. The whole rest of the field is considered to be tahar. What about our ba'a? What if you find four borders of a field all marked off? So then it changes. Then we assume heim taharin, that the borders themselves are in fact tahar. V'kolasod kula tamei. If they marked off all four borders of the field, that's an indication that the entire field is tamei. And the way to mark the field is by marking it on all four sides. Damar ma. We're not allowed to be marchik the marking from the place of tumah too much, and therefore in order not to be metame Eretz Yisrael, and that explains this halacha. How does this explain this halacha? So Rashi writes, "Ulahachi tzien kol arba mitzarv dite kol asad nitma ubetzion de mitzar echad lo sagi lekula dein marchik and tzion mi makom tumah." Says that explains really the first halacha, that when we're tzai in one border of a field, it's not going to be to mark the entire field, because that would mean that the tziyun is very far away from where the tumah is. If the tumah extends throughout the entire field, and we're only being mitzayin at one end of the field, that's being marchik too much. It's being marchik the tziyun too much from the rest of the tumah. So that's why if you want to mark off an entire field, you should be mitzayin all around the field, directly around the entire field. And that way the tziyun is right on the border of where the tumah is to be found. Good, so that's the end of the discussion about marking off graves. Then the Mishnah said, "V'yotzin af al klayim," that we go out to find any klayim that may be planted in people's fields to get rid of all the klayim. So that's what we say on Chol HaMoed, you're allowed to do that. So frek the Gemara, is that when the Beis Din sends out shluchim to get rid of klayim on Chol HaMoed? V'aklayim b'cholo shel moed nafkinan. Do we go out for klayim on Chol HaMoed? Or minu al eskistira be'echad ba'ador mashmin al ashkalim v'al klayim. On Rosh Chodesh Adar, that's when we let it be known that people should get ready to give machsa shekel, and we let it be known that they have to beware of any klayim that might be in their fields, to uproot the klayim in their fields, as a Mishnah Maseches Megillah and elsewhere, b'chamisha asar bo, and then on the 15th day of Adar, Koranes HaMegillah B'Krachim, we read Megillah in walled cities. Now, why do we say the 15th? Why not say the 14th of Adar, we read Megillah in most places, in every other kind of city, when we celebrate Purim? So Tosfos points out, because we're going to mention other things that are also done b'chamisha asabo, that are done on the 15th day of Adar. So that's why we highlight the 15th day of Adar, because the 14th day of Adar, there's no other halacha we're interested in talking about right now, other than the Kriyas HaMegillah. So we focus on the 15th day of Adar, where it has several halachas. So b'chamisha asabo, on the 15th day of Adar, here's what we do. We read the Megillah, that's number one. V'yotzin likvotz asadrachim. We go to remove any thorns and stumbling blocks from the roads. U'lesakin arachovos. And we go to fix the streets. V'lomad ha-mikvot. So we go to measure out the mikvahs to make sure they all have 40 sa'ah. Va'osin kol tzarchei rabim. And we do all sorts of tzarchei rabim. We discussed yesterday what that comes to include, what tzarchei rabim means. U'mitzaynin es hakvaros. And we mark off the graves. V'yotzin al haklayim. And we go out to find klayim to get rid of any klayim that might be out in the fields. So when do we do that? Apparently we do that on the 15th day of Adar, which is not anywhere near Chol HaMoed. That's a month away from him, more than a month away from Chol HaMoed. So why is it that we're going to do this, that our Mishnah says we do this on Chol HaMoed? Here we see Beferish that we do it on the 15th day of Adar. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Bar Chanina, it's a machlokes, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, how to be miyashiv this stira. Chad omer kan bebachir kan ba'afil. One says the difference is whether it's grains that grow early or those that grow in late, meaning that you go out both times, one for the early growing grains in the field, and the other for the later growing grains in the field. So there could be a new klayim problem that arises in between 15th day of Adar and Chol HaMoed Pesach. V'chano amar kan bizroim kan biyirakos. And the other one says, no, it's a difference between, it's not whether grain comes in early or comes in late, it's different types of things that you plant. When it's grain, then you go out to Tesvav Adar, because that comes, grows in before the yirakos. But when it comes to yirakos will grow in a little bit later, and therefore you go out later for the yirakos. Now Rashi points out that really the Gemara could have asked not just about the yotzin al haklayim, because this Mishnah gave us a whole list of things that we do on Tesvav Adar, which is pretty much the same list that we gave of things that you do on Chol HaMoed. It wasn't just klayim that's a stira, the whole list is a stira. So Rashi points out in Dibur Maskel Ves Mikvos HaMayim, V'haydilo Parach Nami B'Gemara Ashar Mas Nisin. Why didn't the Gemara ask about the rest of the Mishnah as well? Ditani Masaknin Adrachim V'Ruchavos B'Chol HaShomoed. Our Mishnah said that we're Masakin the Drachim and the Ruchavos in Chol HaMoed. V'achatana B'Tesvav Adar. And over here it says we do that on Tesvav Adar. Mishum Delav Pirch. He says that wouldn't be such a kasha. The bedinu, the masakim lutrezimni, says roads constantly need to be repaired. It makes sense that you would have to fix them more than once. The chimasakim b'tesvav adar asu geshamim. Yeah, we fix it on tesvav adar, but we still realize that it's going to rain again. And when it rains again, umakalkuli luhu, it's going to ruin the roads. V'hadri masakni luhu b'chalo shel moed. And therefore, we're going to need to fix them again on chol HaMoed. Aval aklayim kiven dakru l'gamri b'chamisha sabad l'amid l'mepapo b'chalo shel moed. But the Gemara's question is, klayim doesn't make sense. It shouldn't grow back. If you pull it out in Tesvav Adar, it should not be growing back by Chol HaMoed. So why are we going out again on Chol HaMoed? So that's what the Gemara gives two answers. The Gemara says either we're talking about the go out in Tesvav Adar for the early growing grain and Chol HaMoed for the later growing grain, or it's the difference between grain and vegetables. Tesvav Adar for the grain and and cholamoid for the vegetables. So those are the terutzim, but that's why it's only a kasha on that line. Amr Rav Asi, Amr Rav Yochanan, lo shanu ela she'ein nitza nikr, aval nitza nikr yotzen aleihem. This holding of going out at specific times, at Tesvav Adar, Chol HaMoed, whenever it is that you may be going out, that's only, we only wait till that time if it's not something that's, if the sprouting of the klayim is not very evident. But if it's evident beforehand, then you go and you take care of it beforehand also. Meaning these are not set in stone, that these are the times that you, the only times that you would go out. If you see there's a need for it to go out earlier, so then you'd go out earlier as well. So frankly, Gemara, but why in Chol HaMoed, of all times to possibly go to get rid of the klayim, why would we wait for Chol HaMoed specifically? Why not go the week before Pesach? Why not go the week after? Why specifically Chol HaMoed? So Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Schar Pu'ula Demozli Gaban. It's because it's easier to find cheap labor on Chol HaMoed. The people who normally work aren't working on Chol HaMoed, so it's easy to find people, the Beis Din can find people who are willing to do it for a very cheap price, to go out and find the klayim and uproot all the klayim. Amra zid vitem ramasharshia shema mina. Oh, so you see from there, ki avinu luschar mitrumas halishcha yavinu lu. It must be that we're paying them with hektish funds, that we're paying them with the trumas halishcha, and that's why we're looking for the best deal, we're looking for the cheapest price. Disal gadaitach mitituy yavinu lu, because if we're going to assume that whoever has klayim in their fields, they're going to be the ones responsible for paying for the guys who come to clear it out, for paying for the people who come to find it, then my nafkalaminayu, kolkamit. Then what difference does it make? Whatever they ask for, so that should be their wages, that should be their price. And if it costs a little more, so fine, let it cost a little more. Why do we have rachmanus? But it's only because that we're using the trumas halishcha that we're looking, that we're so interested in finding the best price. So Tosos points out over here, the Muzli Gabon, Tosos points out, the Mandiyam Lekaman, Schar Pu'ula She'in Lo Mayochal, Shari, if you assume like the Shita that we're going to have later on, that when someone needs to work because he doesn't have what to eat, so he's allowed to work on Chol HaMoed, so that's all good. So I understand why people are allowed to take, what meaning we're talking about how we're paying them, but how are they allowed to get paid for work that they're doing on Chol HaMoed? Aren't you not supposed to work on Chol HaMoed? So he says, if you hold that schar pula shein lo mayochal is mutter, so I understand that they could take their schar. El mandi amar aser, but according to the shita, it's going to say it's aser to work and get paid for your work on Chol HaMoed. Lo yadin an hechen yisku pola b'moed. He says, I don't know how that's mutter. How are they allowed to hire workers on Chol HaMoed? Why should that be mutter? V'shemi yishlomer dahani de mitzvos hitiru. Maybe because these workers are not stam doing work. They're doing a mitzvah, so the tzorech mitzvah, we allow people to receive wages when they're doing a job that involves a mitzvah. So the Beis Yosef writes that we see from this Tosos that you're allowed to hire a worker on Chol HaMoed, the tzorech mitzvah, even if he's yeshloma yochal. Even if he has what to eat, if it's a tzorech mitzvah, and you're allowed to pay someone to do a mitzvah. And that's saying, he says, it's pure, it's directly from this Tosos, we see it clear. However, the Taz in Simon Tavkuf Memdal and Sifkat Nalf asks on the Beis Yosef from a Rivash. The Ramah in Tavkuf Memdal and Sifkat Nalf quotes a Rivash that you're not allowed to do Melach and Chol HaMoed the tzorech mitzvah, and that's it. You're not allowed to do Melach and Chol HaMoed the tzorech mitzvah. And over here, the Beis Yosef says, not only you're allowed to do Melach and Chol HaMoed the tzorech mitzvah, you're allowed to get paid for the Melach and Tzorach mitzvah. Even if he's Yesh Lamayochal, you're allowed to get paid for the Melach and Tzorach mitzvah. So first, the Taz has to be Miyashiv that the Rivash only answers by mitzvahs that say that are mutal on a person to do, and he could do it after the Yontif as well. So that's when we say, don't do it now, do it later. But when there's an Isser for a person to be Yoshev Batal, when a person doing nothing is going to be, by definition, in violation of an Isser, it's not Stam, I could do the mitzvah now or I could do a mitzvah later. If you don't do it now, you're violating an Isser every moment you leave it there. For example, where you're Mekayim Klayim, the Isser of Klayim is not just to plant Klayim, the Isser of Klayim is to be Mekayim Klayim, to leave klayim growing in your field. So you're leaving it for an extra week growing in your field, you're violating an Isser every moment that it's growing in your field. So that may be the Ramah wouldn't say is Asr to do a Malacha. That may be the Ramah would be Moda to the Beis Yosef and to the Balei Atosos that it's going to be Mutter. However, the Taz says the problem with that answer is that the Shulchan Aruch in Tafkuf Memhei writes that it's Asr to write on Chol HaMoed, even to be Magia Us Achas B'Sefer is Asr. Even to correct correct a mistaken letter in a Sefer Torah is Asir. Now the Gemara Maseches Ksuvos tells us that Al Sishka Ba'alecha Avla, that you're not allowed to keep an Avla in your house. The Gemara says, what's an Avla? What's that you keep in your house? A Sefer She'eino Muga. If you have a Sefer Torah that has a messed up letter, that has something that's a mistake, that's going to make a puzzle, that you're not allowed to keep in your house. It's just like being Mekayim Klayim. It's keeping something around that should not be kept around. That itself is an Isser. So if that's the case, says the Taz, why does the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, if the halacha is that anything that's an ongoing Isser, you're allowed to, that's called the Tzorich Mitzvah to do, and you're even allowed to get paid for it, why does the Shulchan Aruch Paskin that you're not allowed to fix the letter in the Sefer Torah? Now the Chida in Birkei Yosef is Miyashi, the Kasha of the Taz, from the Rivash, the stira between the Beis Yosef and the Rivash and the Ramah, that Asr is doing Malach L'chol Mod Tzorich Mitzvah. He says when the Beis Yosef is Medayik from Tosfos that the Tzorich Mitzvah is Mutter, it's Dafka Melechas Hedyot, not Melechas Uman. The Rivash that the Ramah is quoting is that Asr is a Dvar Mitzvah when it's a Maisa Uman, when it's something that requires professional attention. That's why the Shulchan Aruch Chassar is correcting a Sefer Torah. Not everyone knows how to write the Osios of a Sefer Torah to correct the Sefer Torah properly. That's a Maisa Uman. So that's going to be Asr. But a Maisa Hedyot, something that anyone could do, rip out some klayim. It doesn't take any great expertise to do that. So that we could pay somebody. That's the Tzorich Mitzvah. The Taz, for his part, disagrees. He says that he disagrees with the Beis Yosef entirely. He says, I see what Tosfos says, that mitzvos hitiru, that for the Tzorich mitzvot hitiru, but I also see the way Tosfos writes it is, v'shema yesh lomar, that maybe you could answer. So says the Taz, the Tosfos said a petara safek, he wasn't really sure that this is the answer. He said, shema, so I'm not convinced that this is going to be the halacha, just because this is the only answer that Tosfos actually suggests. So that's why the Taz is not convinced that this comment of the Beis Yosef is correct, that you're allowed to pay somebody for doing work on Chol HaMoed when it's Litzorich Mitzvah. Now the next Tosfos points out, Mitrumas Halishcha, the Gemara said that we pay them from the Trumas Halishcha, so Ein Lahakshos Tosfos says, Ha Ispehen Mi'ila, Delev Bezin Masan Alayu. Don't ask, Ay, it's Mi'ila, how can you use the Trumas Halishcha? He says, no, Lev Bezin Masan Alayu. There's a Tanai in the funds that come in for the Karbanos HaTzibur, that whatever extra funds we have left over are going to be used for various communal needs. This is one of those communal needs, to pay the people to go and find the klayim and get rid of the klayim. And in fact, Tosfos points out in Maseches Ksuvos, there's a whole list of things that we pay, that we use the Trumas Halishcha for. It's not only for Karbanos HaTzibur, a whole list of Tzarchei Tzibur that we use it for. Now, which money is this actually coming from? So the Shita of the Talmud Arimi Pariz writes that the schar that they would take from the Trumas Halishcha was from the Truma Yeshana, was from last year's funds, which they can't use anymore for the carbon anyway. Meaning from Nisan and on, you have to use the new funds anyhow. So that's from the Shirayim from the previous year, and that's called the Mosar Halishcha, because you're not allowed to use it anymore for Karbanos. But the Truma Chadasha is used for the Karbanos, and the basis is Masna every year, that anything that's left over in it's not going to be required for Kabbalah Satsibur. Bezin will do whatever it is that they want to do with it. Good. Now, there's also a discussion in the Rishonim. Tos Yontif raises the question, when the Rambam in the fourth parak of Hilchos Shkalim lists off all the things that we would use the Trumas Halishcha to pay for, he doesn't mention the people or Yotzei al HaKlayim. So Tos Yontif wonders, why does the Rambam leave out what's beferish in our Gemara, that we use the Trumas Halishcha to pay for the people of Yotzei al HaKlayim. So the Aliyah Rabbah in Siman Tavkuf Mem Dalet is mitarets that after the Takana that we're about to learn about, that the Shluchim would no longer actually have to physically remove the Klayim, the later Takana was, we're going to see on the top of Mem Beis, was that they would just go and they would be mafkir the field. If they'd see some Klayim in your field, they'd say, okay, your field is hefker, it no longer belongs to you. So it didn't involve that much work. They didn't have to pay them anymore. You only have to pay someone if the person was actually doing work. They're just going to be mafkir everything, so then it didn't involve too much work anyway, so that was totally fine. However, some of the Achronim are bothered, Birkei Yosef and others, that who's going to go out? Even if it just involves looking and searching and then being mafkir, who's going to do that for free? Meaning people are still going to want to get paid. They're still spending their time to go out to find the klayim, even if they're not ripping it up. They're not going to want to do it for free. So achronim have different ways of being miyashiv. Some of the achronim suggest that the schar was because they once they're mafkir the field, they can then be zoch in the field. I mean, if you're mafkir the field, then it's hefker. Then you could take it for yourself. So the chance that they're going to find klayim was worth it. They may not find klayim, then they'll get nothing for all their efforts. But they might find klayim, and then they'll be able to be mafkir someone's field, and then they'll be able to take the field. And if they can take the field, so that's quite a benefit for them. That's a significant financial benefit. So the risk is certainly worth it. Matzev's Moshe says a little differently. It says once they made the din that they're going to be mafkir the fields, they also made a knas that the people who own the fields have to pay the workers. So the workers would go out. Out of Suffolk that they would find, that maybe they would find Klayim, and if they would find Klayim, it would be worth it, because then they would get paid for all their efforts. If they didn't find Klayim, they wouldn't get paid for their efforts, whereas previously, when they would get paid from the Trumas HaLishcha, they got paid for their efforts regardless. They got paid by the Trumas HaLishcha just for being there, but once they made the Takana that they're mafkir the fields, so the Trumas HaLishcha didn't pay them, but the people who owned the fields were responsible for paying them. So says Gemara, two lines from the bottom, Ad kama, and how much klayim do they have to find in order to be mevata? In order to say that it's actually a significant problem and it's not just batel? Some Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak calls a shninu kol sa'a sheyeshba rova zera miminacher yima'et. If you have a sa'a that has a rova of a different type of zera interspersed or planted in that area, then you need to be mevata. That's enough klayim to consider it problematic. So that there is a certain amount of klayim that's apparently acceptable. Meaning this is the big chiddush over here is that there is a certain amount that will say, okay, it's batel, it's not significant enough, it's not going to be a problem. Tosa Rush raises the question that by Klei Zrayim, it's the Issur Zriyas Min HaTorah. So why aren't we makbid even on a kol shu like all other Dine Torah? So he says that maybe it doesn't have a shame klayim unless it's a taruvas hanikr. If it's a taruvas, it's not even nikr, that you can't even tell that there's anything else mixed in there, maybe that's not even called a shem klayim. The Bartanura writes that min haTorah chad b'trei batel, so it's not called zareya klayim because you have bitl barov. It's only marasayin ba'alma that you need to be memayedit for, so it's only marasayin when it looks like it's problematic, but otherwise it would be bitl barov. So a lot of the achronim are very unhappy with that Bartanura that he assumes klayim is bitl barov. Bitl barov is when you have one clear isser and one clear heter. So the isser gets mixed in with the heter. So the isser is batel, barov, heter. When you have two things that are each independently totally mutter, and it's just the combination of the two that creates an isser, so what, you're going to say you have 51% of one, 49% of the other, so it's not shatness now? It's not klayim? It's not a, that's very difficult to say that you're going to apply bitl barov to something like klayim. So some of the achronim, what? So basar b'chalav, we don't say bitul barov, right? You need it's got to be b'shishim. It's got to be mivatel the tam entirely, right? So to say bitul barov, to say chad b'trei is very 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 difficult to say such a thing. So Tos Yantav is bothered. It's not that it's not shaykh bitul barov and something like this, but it has to relate more to the nikar iser kind of issue. There's also a discussion, Yerushalmi has a discussion, when you find a small amount of klayim in a field and it's enough to create an isser, it's this rova in a sa'a, do we say the only option is to rip it out? Can you just add more of the other kind, of the majority, and then create a sense of bittul? Is that a violation of ein mevatel in isser l'chadchila? I mean, is that called being mevatel isser? Do you say no, it's just not a shame klayim, that you took away the entire problem of klayim? So that's the discussion in Yerushalmi, the Achronim bring, the Achronim have such a discussion. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch passing that you're allowed to be mosif, that you're allowed to add on to it. But it's risky business. You just have to make sure that it's not going to overgrow and then get to a point where it's not going to be batel. But wait a second, didn't we learn in a brisa that it's not about ripping out klayim, it's that it would be mafkir the whole field? Says there was different stages of the takana of how to deal with klayim when they found klayim in the field. The Tanya, the brisa lays out three stages as follows. Originally Originally, when they would find klayim in someone's field, the shluchei bezin would come, they'd rip it out of the field, and they'd throw it in front of the animals of the owner of that field. So vayibali batim smich and shtei smachos, and the people who owned that field were very, very happy with that. They got free labor. They got the two good things happen. Achash menashkel and sadusayin. First of all, you ripped out all the weeds from my field. You ripped out the other stuff that was growing in my field that I was too lazy to rip out myself. Viachash mashlich vebantam, and you feed my animals. So fantastic! Thank you so much, shluchei bezin. You helped me out a great deal. So they realized that it wasn't much of a punishment for the people who allowed klayim to grow in their field, so they needed to change things up a little bit. So instead of feeding it to their animals, they would go rip it out of their fields and throw it in the streets. So they their animals of these field owners wouldn't get any benefit from it. But they would still benefit, they would still be very happy because they were coming and clearing out my field from any foreign weeds that are in my field that I don't really need. I mean, people weren't planting klayim in their field, the hachis, they just were allowing klayim that was growing there to grow there. They just weren't being vigilant enough to take care of it. So that's all it was. So they were being rewarded for their laziness. You're not going to do it yourself? Good, we'll send people to do the work for you. So great, they were very happy with that. So that wasn't a punishment. So the next level of takana was to be mafkir the entire field. Once they made that takana, so then it was obviously very bad for the field owners. They lost their entire field just because they were too lazy to pull out some of the klayim. The Rambam in Hilchos Yom Tov, Perek Zayin, Halacha Yud-Aleph writes, V'yotzin shluchei beizdin lehafkir. So it sounds like the shluchei beizdin would go, they'd find klayim, and then they would declare on behalf of beizdin, hefker, beizdin, hefker, that this field is hefker. But it sounds like it's something that they needed to do. It was a declaration that needed to be made that it was hefker. The Tur in Chosha Mishpat, Simreish Ayin Gimel writes, Kol sada sheyesh bo klayim, Harei hu hefker. Any field that has klayim is hefker. It becomes hefker. So Beis Yosef points out, sounds from the tour, that it didn't require an act of making it hefker. It was already, the halacha says that it's automatically hefker. That if you have klayim in your field, you don't need shluchei bezin to declare it hefker. It automatically becomes hefker. So the Beis Yosef asks the question, sounds like it's mufker me'elav. That's not the lashon of the Gemara. The lashon of the Gemara is mafkirin. Sounds like the shluchim have to be the ones to do it. So the bach is miyashev. He says that the Torah means to say that when a person goes in the field and sees klayim, so anyone who goes and finds klayim in someone's field becomes like the shluchei beis din who are bodek, even if they weren't appointed by the beis din, and therefore the field becomes hefker. But it does require some act of somebody finding the klayim in order to make it hefker. It's just that anyone can become a shluchei beis din. Milchas Chinuch, he says that the in Milchas Chinuch Mitzvah Shmamei, he writes that the hefker of the sada doesn't stop the bailam from going and being zocha in the field again. I mean, hefker means anyone could take it, including the original bailam of the field. So why is this a punishment? Because anyone else could also take it. Someone else might come and take it before the bailam of the field. Chaznish points out also, if he's zocha in it again, and there's still klayim there, and he hasn't gotten rid of the klayim, so it's weiter hefker. It will keep becoming hefker until he gets rid of the klayim. So it's not going to help him, even if he is zocha right away. If he does take it back right away, it's still not going to help because it's going to become hefker until he actually takes care of the problem. In Shulchan Aruch, in Chosha Mishpa, Reisha and Gimel Paskins, that a field that has klayim, if it has the right percentage of klayim, mafkirin beizdin as kol asada, that beizdin is mafkir the whole field. So it sounds like you need a beizdin to actually be mafkir. And again, from the Torah, it sounds like you don't need a beizdin to be mafkir. So there's a big nafkamina when we don't have a beizdin nowadays that's overseeing these things. Do we assume that the field is actually hefker? So it's a big machlokas, it sounds like, between the tour and the Shulchan Aruch, what the halacha would be. Does it happen on its own, or do you need a basin to actively be involved in order to make these things happen? Okay, new Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Moshkin es hamayim me'ilun le'ilan. You're allowed to bring water from one tree to another tree in order to irrigate the trees. Ubuvad shaliyashkas kol asada, as long as you don't water the entire field. Why not water the entire field? Because we're assuming the whole field is a sada beis habal, and you're not allowed to water a sada beis habal. We said in the first Mishnah in the Masechta, you're not allowed to water a sada beis habal on chol hamoed. But the trees have a din like a beis hashlachin, because it would be a hefsin merubah if you don't water water the trees. So to bring water to the trees, that's okay, just not for the rest of the field. Zraim shaloshasu lifnei amoed lo yashke b'moed. Those plants that are not in the habit of getting watered all the time, so you're not allowed to water them in Chol HaMoed. It's not considered a hefsid if they don't normally get watered to water them in Chol HaMoed. The Chum matirin bazel bazel. The Chum say that in both these cases mutter. You're allowed to be mashka the entire field, and you're allowed to be mashka even zrayim that are not normally in the habit of getting watered. And the Rashi points out these Chachamim are Rav Meir on Beis Amaral, who said mashkim menu afilus ad Beis Abal. It's Rav Meir shita. That you're even allowed to be mashka sada beis abal. Now we call Rabbi Meir the chachamim, but that's who it really is. It's Rabbi Meir shita. Amar Rav Yehuda im haisa sada metunenes mutter. If it was a field that's mitunenes, a muddy field, then it's mutter. What does it mean, it was a muddy field? So Rashi writes, if it was a field that was moist and now it has dried up, you're allowed to be mashkid, even though it's a sada beis habal, because since it was moist until this point, if you don't keep it moist, it's going to ruin the entire field. If it's a field that's normally used to being moist and now it's drying up, that's going to be a big hefsid, even on a sada beis habal, and therefore you're allowed to water it. So Rashi understands that Rabbi Yehuda is explaining the din of Rabbi Lozman Yaakov, who says in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to be mashka the sada, only the ilanos, and he says that sometimes you are allowed to be mashka the sada because it could be a big hefsid. The Rambam says that the heter of sada mutananas also is about watering the entire field, but he gives a different reason why Chazal matter being watering the entire field. Rashi says it's because of a hefsid. The whole field is going to get destroyed if you don't water it. The Rambam writes in Hilchus Yom Tov, Perichas Halacha Gimel, Shekol Advarim Eilu Ein Behem Toreach Yaser. Because it's not such a big tircha to water an already moist field. That's how the Rambam writes. So the Rambam sounds like sada mutananas means it's currently still moist and muddy, and you want to keep on watering it because it's wet anyway. It's not gonna be that big a deal to water it. Rashi sounds like it's moist, but it's already drying up, and if it dries up, the whole field is going to be ruined, and that's why you're allowed to water it. So big nafkamina, Bir Alacha writes in Tavkuf Lamed Zayin that it's a big nafkamina between the Rambam and Rashi. If the field used to be moist and now is drying up, according to Rashi, it's mutter because we're choshesh that the whole field is going to get destroyed. According to the Rambam, no. If it's already drying up, then it's going to be a tircha yisera, and tircha is going to be aser. It's not going to be allowed to water it anymore. Tani namiyach, you have a brisa just like this. When do we say that you're not allowed to water the field of moed? That's only those types of plants that don't normally get watered beforehand. But plants that get watered all the time, you're allowed to water them on chol moed as well, because we assume they're going to get ruined if they don't get what they're used to. And it said beferish in the brisa that a sada mutananas is mutter. So it's a raya to Rav Yehuda. The ein mashkin sada garid b'moed. We're not mashka a sada garid on moed. So Rashi explains, what's that? That's a field that's always been dry, that never needed much water. So that you're not allowed to do. The chum matirim bazel bazeba. The chum say it's mutter on both. Amravina shmamina hay tarbitza shari le tarbutze b'chol ha'demoedah. If you have a garden, you're allowed to sprinkle water on the garden on chol ha'moed. Sada garid may taima da afla mashvila charfa. Why is it by the sada garid that you're not allowed to water it? Because there's no big loss. Why is it that you are allowed to do it even though there's no big loss? Still, it's mutter to be mashbiach the field to make it better. So achanami afla mashvila charfa. Here also, you're being mashbiach the field. You're making the field a little bit better, and that's going to work. Tan Rabbanan, Marbitzin, or two Girsos over here. The Gra has a Girsa Ein Marbitzin, which obviously makes a big difference. Either Marbitzin or Ein Marbitzin, Sada Lavan B'Shvius, Avalo B'Moed. So either you're not allowed to do it on Shvius or Moed, or you're allowed to do it on Shemitah, but you're not allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. Marbitzin means to sprinkle a little bit of water on the top of the field. So two Girsos, whether you're allowed to do it during Shemitah, but certainly you're not allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. Now, if you're not allowed to do it during Shemitah, you have the Girsa of the Gra that say that you're not allowed to water the field during Shemitah. There's a question in the contemporary poskim, well, that's when you're actually physically going to go out to water the field. What if you have a sprinkler system set on a timer? and it's just going to turn on. It's going to water the field itself. So is that a problem for it to happen on Shemitah? You're not doing anything on Shemitah. Is there a problem with having that happen during the Shemitah year? So, or on Moed for that matter? Now, this is a shaila that comes up all the time when it comes to watering our lawns on Shabbos. People have their sprinkler system set up on a timer, and it turns on itself on Shabbos. Sometimes if you have it turn on every other day, so half of the Shabbos, it will turn on. Or certainly even if you set it by the week, and it only turns on certain weekdays, but very often Yantif falls out on those weekdays, so the sprinkler will turn on a Yantif day. So is there any problem with this? So in Shuvah Shevet Alevi, Rav Vosner discussed, he says, by Shabbos, the Gemara says, this is a Beferish Gemara, the Gemara in Shabbos, Taf Yud Ches, says, by Shabbos, that Tanya poskin mayim legina erv Shabbos im chashecha, umismalis v'alechas kol hayom kulo, that you could open up the waterway that irrigates the field before Shabbos, and let it continue into Shabbos, even though it's actually being watered on Shabbos, but there's no maisa that you did on Shabbos. If the whole maisa was done before Shabbos, then there's no problem. Now, one could argue that that's a little different, because over there it's understood that it's one continuous watering. Nothing's turning on Shabbos, whereas when you set something on a timer, something's turning on Shabbos. So before, everyone had sprinklers that turned on automatically, when most sprinklers were still manual, and some fancy sprinklers had timers, so they could say it was Marasayin that if the sprinkler turns on Shabbos. Nowadays, every sprinkler system that's installed is installed with a timer. There may be a manual override, but that's not the normal way that people turn on the sprinklers. It's always with a timer. It's very inexpensive to put a timer in. So it's probably not even a Marasayin issue. So okay, if you're going to set your thing, you might as well set it not to go on Shabbos. But that's but Meikra Din, it's probably mutter to have the sprinkler go on Shabbos. But what about Shemitah? So by Shemitah, aside from the mitzvahs lo sase, that you're not allowed to do avodas karka on Shemitah, there's also a mitzvah sase of shavsa aretz Shabbos la Hashem. Minchas Chinuch proves that according to Rashi and other Rishonim, the mitzvah is on the cheftza of the eretz, that it needs to be shoves mimalacha. So it's not only on the person working the field, but the field itself needs to rest. And so maybe there's makom lahachmir when it comes to Shemitah not to allow a sprinkler system to even water the field if you assume that ein marbitzin lahen sadalavin b'shvias, that you wouldn't even be permitted to do it al yedei a timer in a sprinkler system. So vaytel l'gmar v'atanya marbitzin bein m'moed bein b'shvias, but we have another brayso that says you're allowed to do it both on chol moed and Shemitah. Amravunu lo kasha harab loz ben Yaakov harabban. That's the machlokas of loz ben Yaakov. And the Rabbanan, Tanya Ida, that's the Machlokas in our Mishnah. Tanya Idach, Marbitzin Sadalavan Erev Shvias, Kadesh Yetzi Yurakos Bishvias. You're allowed to sprinkle the field with water on Erev Shemitah so that vegetables will grow during the Shemitah year itself. Velo Od, Elisha Marbitzin Sadalavan Bishvias, Kadesh Yetzi Yurakos Mutsai Shvias. Not only that, but you're allowed to be Marbitz the field on during the Shemitah so that Yurakos will come out on Mutsai Shvias, that the vegetables will grow on. Now, on the first half of it, that we said that marbitzin on erev shvius, so that the vegetables grow on shvius, the Mishnah Rishonah has a very, very basic kasha. There is a halacha called svichei shvius. Svichei shvius are asurim. Things that grow on their own in the field during Shemitah are asur anyway. So what's the benefit of watering your field on Erev Shvius so that in Shemitah things will grow? What do you mean? It's going to be Svicha Shvius when it grows. It's going to be also anyway. So the Mishnah Rishonah answers that we're talking about Svicha Habar, that it's wild Svichim that grow on their own, and that's what you're allowed to water. But that doesn't seem to work, because the whole idea of wild Svichim that grow on their own is that you don't care if they grow or not. So then what are you watering them for? The fact that you're watering them shows that you do care. So the Chazanish and Shvius and Siman Tazayin has two other. He says the Gemara may mean to say that you marbitzin so that the land will be ra'ui to be motzi, that the land shouldn't get ruined, but not that you actually are interested in anything actually physically growing during Shemitah. It's just to preserve the land so that the land won't become totally destroyed. Or he says it could be that we're talking about Yurakos, where there were never gozer mishum svichim on Yurakos. The Mikdash David suggests the third answer. He says based on the Shara Melech, svichim are mutter bahana. Svichim are only asa ba'achila, but it's mutter bahana.
So you can get hanav from the Svichei Shviyas. So that's why you might want to water the field on Erev Shviyas in order for things to grow in the field on Shemitah itself. Rav Moshe also discussed the other halacha, that you're allowed to be water the field during Shemitah so that things will grow on Motzai Shviyas. Rav Moshe in the Tshuva, Nigros Moshe Yardeich El Gimel Sum Kof Lamed, says, when is that allowed? That you're allowed to do Avodas HaKarka during the Shemitah year to prepare? You're allowed to plow the field on the last day of Shemitah year? Last day, it's not going to help for this year anyway. It's only going to help for next year. Of course, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to plow a field for Shemitah year. He says, what you have to say is that hashka'a is not a malach mitzad atzma. That you have to view watering a field as not a malach in its own right. It's only a to'elas that it causes in the future, but it's not considered an avodas hakarka. It's not considered a malach on the karka itself, unlike harisha, which itself is considered to be an avodas hakarka. Okay, we'll stop there. Baruch Hashem, we'll pick up at the Mishnah tomorrow.